You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. We're talking games and movies and actors.
Words? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie, and I am your host along with Ryan this week. We are bringing you a two-part episode, which includes the creators around this incredible app and technology called Headspace XR. And also, we're doing yet another recap of X-Men 97. In our first segment, we welcome Sarah Cohen, VP of Content Creation of Headspace, and Dora Kamau, Headspace Meditation and Teacher of Headspace. We're talking about Headspace XR. It's a first of its kind immersive playground which recently launched on MetaQuest headsets back in March, where users can move, play, meditate, or just explore an adventure with their friends. This was developed by Headspace and Nexus Studios, and the experience includes mood-boosting games and one-on-one guided meditations, and it helps users strengthen their mind, body, and connection through movement and play, and offers the players to just create mindfulness techniques and so much more. So we're pleased to talk to both Sarah and Dora in this first segment all about Headspace XR's technology. In our second segment, we are talking about episode 7 of X-Men 97. Ryan and I break down the recap, and we brought on a special guest, Damian D. Smith, to join us in our discussion about the latest episode called Bright Eyes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode, this two-part episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast, featuring the team behind Headspace XR and our weekly recap of X-Men 97. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie and I am your host. I am so geeked out to talk to you guys about these two incredible guests who I got an opportunity to check out the product that they have, that they are a part of, that they are helping to cultivate and craft and really promote and talk about here on the podcast. And it's called Headspace. We have Sarah Cohen and Dora Kamau here on the podcast to talk to us about it. And before we jump into the interview, I want to give you just a brief introduction into who these incredible women are. Sarah Cohen holds the position of Vice President of Content Creation over at Headspace, leading the content team in devising, strategizing, and executing various in-app and off-platform initiatives. And these encompass a wide range of content from mindfulness practices, themed collections, and guided programs to videos, podcasts, and emerging formats. And then we have Dora Kamau, who is currently one of the meditation and mindfulness teachers over at Headspace. Her meditation and mindfulness journey began in 2010. After experiencing a series of unfortunate events, she started exploring holistic approaches to heal her mind, body, and spirit. And by 2016, Dora was fully committed to a daily practice. And since then, she's been on a mission to share her healing journey with others, creating spaces for people of all backgrounds to experience and embrace their full selves. And just to kind of give you a brief summary, Headspace is this great software that is designed to give you a nice therapeutic and relaxing chance to be able to just give you like mindfulness and meditation through this virtual reality space. And
course, these ladies are going to dive into it in a lot more detail and articulate it way better than I can. But I had the opportunity to experience this myself over at South by Southwest this year. And it was incredible and it was relaxing and I enjoyed every bit of it. So without further ado, Sarah, Dora, thank you so much for coming on the Black Girl Nerds podcast and talking to us about Headspace today.
Thank you for having us. This is exciting.
Yeah, excited to dive in and talk about Headspace XR.
Absolutely. So, Sarah, I'm going to start with you. For our listeners, tell us what is Headspace XR and what is the mission of this technology?
Yeah, so I mean, at Headspace, and for those who aren't familiar, you know, Headspace is a mobile 2D app. Where, you know, we take a lot of pride in being the world's most accessible, comprehensive mental health platform. Together with Nexus Studios, we decided to honestly embark on this adventure when Meta approached us to say, hey, like, what could Headspace actually look like in the VR world? And so, hand in hand with Nexus Studios, which is like an award-winning production company, we developed Headspace XR, which is an immersive app and VR and MR experience that transports users into a playground for your mind where you can move, play, meditate, or just explore this world with your friends. It gives you an opportunity to really check in with yourself and how you're feeling, check in with your friends and ask each other, how are you feeling really, really in this moment? And Headspace XR was really designed to engage younger generations, particularly Gen Z, knowing that they also, you know, are a bulk set of the users in Quest headsets. We knew that it was really important to create something that could engage them, meet them where they are on the platform, right, that they're using, and be able to use the technology that is the Quest headset to be to craft a world that engages them in mindfulness and meditation tools in this new space. You know, Gen Z in particular are really, you know, I read a stat actually on Forbes that it was like 73% of Gen Z report feeling like feeling lonely, either always or some of the time, which is so insane. You're like 73% of them. So we knew they're at this like critical juncture of their mental health journeys, and we know they're really open to talking about mental health, but taking care of your mental well-being is a whole other step. And so we really want to help them to build lifelong mental health habits. So the idea is that when they go into Headspace XR, yes, they're sort of escaping from their everyday life to be able to engage in these activities that can hopefully give them tools and tips so that when they take their headsets off, you know, the next time they're maybe feeling sad or lonely or bored or anxious or happy even, that they can utilize some of the tools and techniques learned in Headspace XR in their everyday lives.
I love how you said escaping into reality, because I think that that is something that a lot of us do, especially us in the gaming space, to be able to just get away from the harsh realities of just the everyday world, or when we're dealing with stress at work, or just dealing with life in general. We escape to playing games, and that's a way for us to just be able to unpack, and it is like a mental health reliever for a lot of us. I know I can speak for myself. I will go to gaming as just a way to relax. And I like how what Headspace XR and just in my brief experience of using the app does on like even a deeper level. And I want to go to you, Dora, because you are an expert in this field of meditation, mindfulness. Tell me, first of all, how important is both of those things, meditation and mindfulness, to the body? And why should we be paying attention more to that?
Yeah, this is a really great question. I think, you know, for those who are listening who are new to both of these terms, I'll begin by breaking them down. So meditation is the training of the mind in awareness and compassion and kindness, insight and wisdom. And we can become more mindful, build this mindful muscle through the practicing meditation. And mindfulness is really this ability that we all have. It's not just only for one type of person or for these type of people. We all have the ability to be mindful. And it's this ability of being aware of what we're doing in the present moment without judgment. And so as we cultivate this skill, we realize that we're moving from a state of reactivity to being able to be more responsive to life, right? I teach MBSR, which is mindfulness-based stress reduction, and we talk about the way that stress manifests in the body especially, and that's because most of the time we're living our life on autopilot. And so when we become more aware of our thoughts, emotions, sensations, we can start to repair our minds and bodies simply by being in the present moment. And I mean, the benefits are endless, right? We are able to reduce stress, anxiety. It's been shown to help with depression. It helps with cultivating greater self-awareness, kindness, compassion. I mean, the list goes on, but I think it's really important for folks to have an understanding of what the practice really is and really making it work for you. And I love that in Headspace XR, we're able to provide such a immersive experience because this practice is one of experience. You can read all the books, you can go to all the workshops, but unless you're really doing it, you won't be able to feel the benefits. And I love that Headspace XR is like a full body experience for people. You're fully immersed in the senses and you have this opportunity to practice the skill and to learn how to be more mindful in such a fun and unique way.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote about how it's just like a fully immersive experience. There's these breathing techniques that you do in the app, and then you're flowing with your arms and bending. And I love that it's designed for people of all different body types. You don't have to be really physically fit, you know, you're just there being able to experience those mindfulness techniques. And also, isn't your voice in the app?
It is. Yes.
Because listening to you right now, you are very, you should do ASMR work because it's just, you have a very peaceful sounding voice. So
Thank you so much.
So Sarah, back over to you. I had read that Headspace XR has a part of the app that has Find Your Force with Star Wars. And that's fascinating to me because our listeners, including myself, are huge Star Wars fans. So can you tell us more about what that's about?
Yeah, so actually the Find Your Force with Star Wars was a video series we did last year. It actually exists on Headspace's YouTube channel. We did some really fun breathing exercises actually with Star Wars IP in the mobile app when we launched our partnership with Disney. But yeah, we have a video series called Find Your Force with Star Wars. And the idea here was really to engage, I think, a younger audience with learning the tips and tools that they need as they encounter, right, different challenging emotions in their everyday life. And so it's a four-part animated series where kids really hopefully are learning mindfulness skills from their favorite, some of their favorite characters from Star Wars in Chewbacca and BB-8. The video guides these two Star Wars characters through like different adventures. And there's definitely like a lot of fun, I would say like Easter eggs, if you're a Star Wars fan. In there, but there's like this larger journey through line of Chewbacca working to get home to his family. And as Chewbacca and BB-8 encounter different challenges and emotions, and we teach them along with viewers how to deal with those through different techniques, how to wind down for sleep, how to practice gratitude. So if you're looking for a way to engage your children and teach them some great tips and tools, and they're Star Wars fans, and even if they aren't, in like a really cute, delightful, short form series. I know we're all mindful of how much time our kids spend in front of screens these days. It's a really great series to be able to help them deal with some of those emotions that might come up throughout their day.
I love it. I mean, I think it's a great gateway to get the younger kids into the app is using Star Wars. So that's fantastic. Dora, back to you. Can you tell us more about your organization, Bliss Your Heart? Because I read that about you, and I was very fascinated about what that entails and what its mission is and directive.
Yeah, that was my baby back in 2017. I was living in Canada at the time in Vancouver. And, you know, was just really struggling. Had just went through a breakup, and yeah, just felt really lost and isolated and wanted to be able to share my experience with people. And so I just put out an Eventbrite saying, if anyone wants to talk about self-care, mental health, mindfulness, join me here at this location. And that night there was like over 60 women that came, complete strangers, and we would just talk and we would meet every single month up until 2020. And it was really powerful and such a catalyst for healing, connection, community, and transformation. And it evolved. So it ended in 2020, but it is something that has evolved. And I carry those experiences with me, and they inform so much of my teaching practice now of how can I make sure that when I am creating content, writing meditations, even with Headspace XR, make sure that the content is accessible and it's, you know, trauma sensitive, or it's accounting for people maybe who are forgotten in these experiences. So yeah, that was Bliss Your Heart. It was such a beautiful, beautiful time in my life, and still carry it with me. It may not be like physically present, but it definitely is infused in all of my teachings and how I show up, that power of community and connection.
Have you found that it's transformed other people the way it's transformed you personally? The folks that have used this app, have you gotten any feedback from people in that way?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in like very rural northern towns in Canada, and like never thought that my life would be how it is now. And so when I, like the other day, I was walking in the grocery store and this woman came up and gave me a big hug, and she's like, I recognize you from the Headspace app, and I love what you do, and I love that you have a course about breakups, and just like sharing her life story with me. And like 15-year-old me is always very in shock of like, whoa, like this stuff is actually happening and people know you. And, you know, me in this present moment is like, yeah, this is making a difference. And I have the ability to touch the lives of so many different people. And just by being vulnerable and sharing my story, I think so much of what we feel shameful for often is held in silence. And so to be able to give a voice to my story and the things that I've experienced and share them in like a mindful and compassionate way, it definitely has a ripple effect and has impacted a lot of people, which is still like so incredible and like surreal for me.
That's yeah. Awesome. That's so beautiful. I love it. Sarah, you mentioned before about how this app is created and directed towards Gen Z. I am not Gen Z. I'm a little bit older. but it impacted me greatly when I did use the app over at South by Southwest. And we have many listeners of this podcast who are older as well that are not necessarily Gen Z. So how would you say that the software is also applicable and designed for older audiences as well? And how would they be able to partake in that?
100%. Yes, Jamie. Like, you know, with honestly everything we do at Headspace, from our 2D app to even Headspace XR, right? And we want this content to be as inclusive and as accessible for everyone. I think we just in particular thought about what could engage a generation that may not be taking care of their mental well-being. to the extent that they really either need to or want to, and how could we access them in a medium, in a technology that they often utilize. So I think it was like, it's sort of with that lens, but yes, I mean, the team that worked on this, I will say, like, spanned ages and generations and demographics, and we were really trying to create an experience that, yes, no matter sort of what your age, if you enter Headspace XR, that you should be able to feel safe and supported, that we can meet you in whatever, you know, mood you're in that moment, and be able to help guide you through the 13 experiences that we have in the app to be able to feel the benefits from. You know, you tapped into this earlier, and Dora, I love your input here too, but we often hear a lot of times that, like, from so many of our mobile users of all ages, that some of the techniques inside our app, whether it be body scans or visualizations, can be really tough in just sort of a pure audio experience. You sort of, right, you need to find the techniques that work for you. But what's been incredible about this space is because of the technology, because of the ability to use visuals, the spatial audio, the full immersion, people are finally finding the ability to maybe be able to access techniques that they couldn't before. So we've heard that where, like, people maybe had trouble with visualization and then did it in Headspace XR, and we're finally sort of able to do that technique or be able to participate in a body scan. Dora, I don't know if you have, like, any, like, sort of insights there that you'd want to add on.
Yeah, I think kind of what I was touching on early, it's just more of an immersive experience into the practice where, you know, audio is just, I see it as like 1D, but now it's like 4D in Headspace XR. Don't get me. I don't know what the D's are, but it just feels more expansive and more immersive than just having that one audio component. And I think especially for something like visualization, where you're getting someone to close their eyes and imagine a beautiful place in nature, sometimes that can be really difficult because, you know, our minds are busy, right? Our minds are filled with so many different thoughts, so many different memories, so many different stories. And with Headspace XR, it's like we kind of can support you in moving past that. Really hard to be distracted in there. I was like, wow, I'm totally present. I'm like, I didn't even have to close my eyes and, like, tune into my breath. I'm just, like, fully here in this moment. And so hopefully we can make these practices more accessible by just adding more elements and components to them. So it's not as much as a heavy lift, but also when we get people to come back and continuously do these practices, they're building upon this habit and skill. And so it's something that they can take with them into their everyday life, where maybe they know to go to that place of happiness when they're about to give a big presentation, or they know to do the box breathing because it felt really good in Headspace XR, and now they're going to do it before they have to have a difficult conversation. So I think we were just able to provide something that can be more supportive and less intimidating when it comes to some of these practices that we share that are just very 1D, if that's the right term.
I mean, it's very supportive, and I would love to use this app for my mom. You know, she's not very mobile, and she doesn't really practice meditation, nor do I much. And I would love to see her be able to use this app the way I was able to experience it, because you're right, like, our minds are very busy. And I've tried to do the whole mindfulness practices in the past and failed miserably at it. I've tried using other apps on my phone and doing that, and it just didn't quite connect with me. But there was something about this Headspace XR technology that really helped. And maybe it's the whole virtual reality component, where you just are inside of this three-dimensional or maybe four-dimensional world, that really locks you into that space where you your mind really does get quiet. And then, of course, Dory, your very relaxing sounding voice helps as well, guides you through those mindfulness practices. It's something that I feel like I would probably be using a lot. I would practice mindfulness a lot more using Headspace XR. So Sarah, back to you. You know, Headspace is breaking into a lot of industries, including film, TV, podcast. Can you share more about how this tech is being used in those mediums?
Yeah, of course. You know, people like been able to find Headspace for years in both like the mobile app and across the various mediums that you've laid out. It's really, really exciting. I think that's always been part of our mission, which is like meet people where they are, right? You can't just expect that everyone is going to download a meditation app, be able to afford it, and instead come in to say, hey, where are the people we're looking to engage? What's really truly our mission, right? And for a long time, like Headspace's mission was, you know, improve the health and happiness of the world. And now, you know, our mission's really expanded to be able to be a lifelong guide to people's mental health journeys. And so we need to meet people where they are. We need to be able to, through right innovative technology and entertainment, be able to teach them. I know I use the word teach like really, really in sort of air quotes, because I feel like every, like the second you say the word teach, it's like snooze fest, I'm learning, but like it's, that's not the point, right? Like the point is in how we do that. And so how we hide the vegetables of being able to convey to people language for emotions, language for mindfulness, right? Definitions of like, how do we practice? How do we take care of ourselves? Really be able to teach people what Headspace is all about, what these practices that have been around for centuries are really about, so that people can start to learn how to take care of themselves. You know, Headspace came to the market when smartphone apps were on the rise. And I think the idea that we should show up in the spaces that people are using and the technologies that they're using so that we can help them, right, with setting boundaries, with showing up in spaces that might be, right, we were seeing all these articles pop up about the use of social media and you know, the being so, we're so connected more than ever before, right, with like all the technology, yet like we're experiencing a mental health epidemic. Like, so how can Headspace show up in all of those spaces for people and be able to teach them ways utilizing the technology, really utilizing the benefits of those technologies to be able to engage people and teach them how to take care of their mental well-being. And to sort of add to that, I would just say like what's really imperative at Headspace is that everything that we put out there into the world is really science-backed, right? We're not about like, hey, do this because it's trendy. No, we're about the fact that like this is scientifically proven to help you. So like, maybe you should try it. You know, I think for me, it's a lot harder to engage in something when I don't know that it's actually proven to help me. And knowing that Headspace is science-backed, that they work on publishing studies. We're about to do that actually later this year, specifically on Headspace XR. We're going to be working with Virginia Tech and Meta to conduct a randomized controlled trial study to really evaluate like how Headspace XR can help people with social health and connection. You know, does it help people with perceived and objective stress? So that, you know, it's like, Jamie, your endorsement's huge, but like, wouldn't it mean even more to you if we were like, hey, yeah, I mean, we did an entire study that shows that it really helps people connect, or that it really can help you with your stress. And so I think it's so important that we continue to to teach people and in all of these various technology mediums, as well as continue to pursue studies that really show the efficacy of the content that we're putting out into the world.
I agree completely. I feel like people need to have this device like in their household, just because all of us are dealing with issues of stress in some capacity. I personally have medical issues with high blood pressure. So I just feel like probably by doing mindfulness and meditation techniques every day, that that could help a little bit. And I think that that's a really important thing, is to look at like the medical benefits and the scientific benefits, and having all of that information, those facts there for people to look at when they're exploring this technology. So it's really cool that you guys are working with universities and doing these studies to learn more about that, not only from like a medical perspective, but also from like a social perspective as well. Dora, back over to you and kind of to wrap this all up, you know, while you were working with the Headspace team, what have you learned about the intersection of mindfulness with this technology?
Yeah, I learned so much. I think one of the biggest things for me was being able to identify the relationship that I have with technology, the relationships that the world has with technology, right? And oftentimes it's not the technology that's the issue, but it's our relationship to it. And so to know that Headspace XR can help people to redefine their relationship to technology and use it in such a helpful and beneficial way, that was really, really, really exciting for me. Like, I grew up with a mom who did not like technology, you know, like at all, like wouldn't allow my brother to play video games whatsoever. And so I was thinking about how that relates to me, and it's like, it was just her relationship to it. And so hopefully with Headspace XR, we can help people to feel empowered to want to take care of their mental well-being using this headset, using the different exercises and practices, and also how technology can support people in creating these habits, like lifelong habits, and do so in a fun and unique way, not in like a boring way, or, you know, a way where it feels so tedious and like a chore, but really bringing that sense of beginner's mind to each and every moment, and helping people to cultivate a greater sense of curiosity through providing this virtual experience. It was, yeah, such a moment for me of like, wow, I'm a part of this thing that could really revolutionize the way that we use technology. And what a privilege and honor that is to be on the like pioneering end of all of this. And I think it's important for people to also recognize, as I shared before, like the definitions of meditation and mindfulness. I think when people think of Headspace, they associate it with meditation, which is wonderful and great. We do that as well, but this is a mindful world, and mindfulness is the ability to be aware in the moment. And so you may want to leave those preconceived notions of what meditation or mindfulness is at the door. And again, fully arrive with a sense of beginner's mind, because yeah, we were really intentional with making it a mindful world, but also making it fun. And non-judgmental and creative, and like so many things that people wouldn't usually associate with the practice. And so I hope that that is able to be felt and experienced. And yeah, people feel really supported and empowered to want to take better care of their minds and bodies through this experience.
I'm so happy you brought that up, Dora, because Jamie, I don't know if you noticed when you tried it out, did you check out your avatar while you were in there?
I did, yes. They weren't able to customize mine, but I did have an avatar. Yes.
Yes. So normally, right, like now if you go into the experience, you can totally customize it as you engage in the experiences. But right, the idea behind our avatar design was like these gender neutral designs, where very honestly, right, so much in VR and in other apps is like customize your avatar and you have endless options. And we just know like there's so much decision fatigue in everyday life that we wanted people to like be able to come in we give everyone these like gender neutral avatars, and really, right, we also know there's so much pressure in your everyday life every time you walk into a room, right, or a Zoom room nowadays, right? It's like what you look like, who you are, the color of your skin, the size of your body, the, you know, what you're wearing. There's just so much judgment and so much on our minds as to who we are and what we represent. And we really were intentional about that. You know, we wanted people to sort of be, to really be able to go into this space and leave all of the judgment behind. And come in with these avatars that they can customize based on engaging with the world around you, based on engaging in these various experiences, all to sort of drive the deeper metaphor that, right, like everything that happens to us in the world does affect us. And everything we do in the world affects those around us and the world around us. And so, you know, it's important to sort of see how, like, right, you, when you engage in experiences in Headspace XR, you get the opportunity to play with these flow bursts, and they can color your avatar in these really cool customizable patterns. But then you have all this flow and energy that you can then impart on the world around you and be able to like transfer those patterns to these like, you know, beautiful cement palettes that we have in different spaces in the world to really be able to bring it to life. But I think it's important for people to know the intentionality in which like everything from like the avatars to the design of the world was really created with thinking about how to make people feel safe and supported throughout their journey.
Oh, absolutely. Indeed. I mean, I love that there's so many options too for folks to check out what this app represents. And I'm sure at this point, many people own a MetaQuest. So if you do, definitely check out Headspace XR. What was really cool too at South By, I was able to experience other different kinds of apps and games. So I had my little fitness game, and then I was able to relax with Headspace, with the meditation, the mindfulness. So for folks listening, you can do your MetaQuest for your gaming, for your fitness, and then, you know, you can have some relaxing meditation and mindfulness activity either later on or first thing when you get up in the morning, which is really cool. I like that. So before we go, Sarah and Dora, I always love to give guests the opportunity to allow our listeners to learn more about where they can find you, where they can learn more about Headspace, if there's anything that's new that's developing that we haven't covered. And yeah, if you can kind of give us that information. And thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, you can find me on the Headspace app. We have podcasts, not just meditations, but we have episodes related to mental health, mindfulness, meditation. We have Dear Headspace, which is a call-in radio show where folks can call in and ask us all types of questions. I love it so much. We have Radio Headspace, where we share snippets about our lives as teachers. And then there's also Sunday Scaries, which I host, which is all about how to combat the dread of returning to work or life on Mondays. And yeah, that's where you can find me. I'm also on Instagram as well. And yeah, thank you so much for this conversation.
And those podcasts Sora mentioned are available, honestly, wherever you find podcasts, but they are available ad-free in the app. And we have amazing content in the mobile app in terms of whoever you are, whatever you're dealing with. And Jamie, I know you said you have some listeners who are not Gen Z. So depending on, you know, whatever you're tackling, whether it's parenting, whether you're struggling with stress or sleep, Dora just launched an incredible sleep program that's in the app that really, if you are struggling with your sleep, I would say like head over there and check it out. And we have exciting stuff coming out later this year. I'll tee up, we'll have a whole guided program around anxiety and mood that's CBT backed. So really come check out the mobile app. And then as far as Headspace XR, I love what Dora said earlier, which is just leave all your preconceived notions at the door. And if you're looking for a way to relax and feel better, and you maybe haven't had success with mindfulness and meditation in the past, please, please, and you have that Quest headset, come explore Headspace XR and be surprised and delighted.
Sarah, Dora, thank you so much for coming on the Black Girl Nerds podcast to talk to us. And I really appreciate your time. And I look forward to seeing what comes down further down the pipeline within Headspace. I'm sure there's going to be more tech that will be evolving and growing. And I appreciate, again, the conversation. This was very enlightening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds podcast. My name is Jamie and I am your host along with Ryan this week. And we are here for yet another recap of X-Men 97 episode 7. Yes.
Yes. Hey, it's hard to keep track. Look at us stay on track. There we go.
Look at us. I am proud of us, Ryan. We are doing episode recaps every week consistently. I was concerned if there was going to be like a week where we didn't get to it, where our schedules would be off, but we've been doing it and I'm proud of us for that. And look, we've got a special guest with us.
Yeah, we do.
I love how we have these special guests that pop in to our recaps every now and then. So we have Mr. Damian D. Smith, the Damian D. Smith on the Black Girl Nerds podcast to chat with us. Damon, how are you? Thank you for coming on our show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jamie and Ryan. I appreciate it. I am I'm doing well. Pretty happy, making things happen. So, but I am excited to be on y'all's show and to talk about these things. You know, I'm a Black boy nerd, so you know, it works out.
And we've been asking some of our guests that have popped in to talk X-Men 97 with us, what was your gateway into X-Men? What got you into the X-Men, the animated series?
You know what, before like the X-Men 97 that we see it, the incarnation now, but you know, the original series, but before that, it was an X-Men series that was on. And I've been following that for quite a while. Then you kind of get into, you know, some of like the baseball cards, you get some of those back in the day as well. So I've been a fan of like the whole X-Men, Marvel, that whole world. That's my thing. You know, I follow, you know, everything. I got the memorabilia around the crib. You know, I got the little, the toys, the trinkets, the collector's items. I try to, you know, do what I can. Star Wars, X-Men, you know, all that. The story of the Phoenix, what? That was a dramatic moment. In my upbringing.
You collected the cards? You collected the
Marvel cards?
I love I did too. I had some
cards. You did too? Okay, there we go.
Yes, where it had like agility and stamina and it had like the different powers that each of the mutants had with a little graphic bar.
Yes, to tie it into, and it kind of showed the like an example of the cards at the end credits of the X-Men 97. So how the cards used to look, how the cards used to look, you see it at the end credits. It gives like the abilities, their power, you know, and I had the video game, the X-Men video game. I had them all, man. We played that. Yeah, you had to get it in like that. X-Men was, you know, did you want to be Wolverine? Did you want to be Cyclops? What superpower you would have, you know, you know, a brother can dream.
I love it. A true X-Men geek here. All right, we're in good company. So we're going to go over the latest episode, aptly titled Bright Eyes, which last week I was a little mistaken. I thought that this was going to be centered on Cable. Not so much. It's centered on Rogue, which I absolutely enjoyed and loved this character arc that we see of Rogue's story. So X-Men 97 episode 7, we open up and we see Gambit's funeral, which heartbreaking. So sad. Nightcrawler, he presides over the event through a eulogy, which I had no idea, by the way, that Nightcrawler eulogizes funerals. Curious to know if he officiates weddings, but it was a sad event. And what was even sadder is that Rogue was not present, and Jubilee was really upset about this. But you know, this funeral really nails, you know, pun intended, nails in the coffin that Gambit is gone. So we see this happening in the very first scene, and we know that Rogue right now is in a state of grieving as she blasts through the desert towards a secret military facility. So I'm going to stop there and ask you guys, what did you think of that scene of Nightcrawler officiating, or not officiating, but eulogizing over a funeral? Jubilee is upset that Rogue is not there. We see that Gambit is, in fact, dead. He is in a coffin. It is reality. What are your thoughts about what's happening here?
Damien, go for it.
First off, it only makes sense that Nightcrawler is doing the eulogy. I mean, he's always was the most, you know, religious of them all. He was very devout, you know, so it just made, and I love seeing a grown-up Nightcrawler, an adult Nightcrawler, you know, and he still kept his spirit, you know, the spirit of who he was as a character. So that only made sense for him to be doing the officiating and having, you know, all the religious markings on his bodies and things like that, how devout it is. So it was right in step. Jubilee being upset, it makes sense. It makes sense. But Rogue, if the history of Rogue, she wasn't always an X-Men. She wasn't always a good guy, you know, a good person in, you know, in the world. So she always had those tendencies. So when she gets fed up to a point, she gets fed up. So it only makes sense that she was going to exact some revenge and she was going to just let it go. Cause both of those were her guys, Gambit and Magneto. So you took both her dudes, you know, and she got unlimited strength. What you expect?
Facts. Ryan?
Yeah, I don't know if I like it. Obviously, it was definitely sad. We got the coffin with Gambit supposed to be, but I don't know if I truly believe that he's never going to come back, though. I mean, maybe not this season, but I don't know if I'm just convinced that there's just no Gambit anymore. Because there's such, like, he has so much storyline. He has so much stuff with Rogue that we know about. So I don't know if I'm totally convinced. I mean, it's the X-Men world, so I don't really believe. And then, like, you know, something that comes later on in an episode also pulled me back to not believe it. So I don't think he's totally gone. I mean, they open up the coffin. I mean, y'all know if we want to see a dead Gambit, but I'm just saying, they just, you know, he cannot.
I know,
be
we
in
don't
coffin.
See his body, right?
I'm just saying, yeah. So I'm just saying, he cannot. I mean, Nightcrawler, you know, you did your thing. You had us. The words was nice, but I'm just saying, I don't think Gambit is totally gone.
I agree. I agree with both Damian and Ryan's sentiments here. I agree with you, Damian, about Rogue's personality. I don't think that we would expect to see Rogue at this funeral. She's always been a bit defiant in that way. We learn more about that through latter part of this episode. But also, Ryan, when you say Gambit not being gone, I 100% believe that. I think that Gambit will either come back as Death, or that there will be some time travel shenanigans happening with Cable. I just don't believe that he's gone. Now, Bo DiMaio, who is very active on Twitter, which I love, because he gives us Easter eggs, he confirms things, he denies things. He has said that Gambit is dead on Twitter. However, that could mean he's dead in this timeline. So
yeah, that's
I still believe... I still believe that Gambit is not dead as far as completely gone from X-Men 97. He's probably just dead in this timeline. So that being said, I don't think that they've completely removed him from this show. But, you know, it could be up for debate. I just personally don't believe that to be the case.
I would like for it to be. I would like for it to be though. I you know, it's as X-Men has grown with its audience, I think some level of finality of certain, because if everybody can die and it's about a 70% chance they'll come back as someone else, it kind of takes some of the punch out of the depths of something like the importance of some of these characters that we all love, yeah, and we invest in. And then, you know, they're taken away. That within itself has a gravity and a shift within the storyline. But if you know that they're going to come back, it kind of, I don't know, it kind of takes the bite out of a couple things. Because Gambit's death was like, he went out like a player too. He, you know, he took him out. He took him with him. You know what I'm saying? You got. I loved how Gambit went out. You know, that's a great storyline. How he ended it. He can ever be remembered as that. But if he comes back as, you know, I'm not saying, because I agree with you. I believe he's going to come back in some kind of, you know, in coordination. But, you know, I would like.
Well, that's why I believe in this iteration, we needed the funeral, you know, so his sacrifice is not just pushed aside. Because he definitely was you know, helping out Rogue to, he was kind of like the last resort to get rid of, you know, what was going on. Like everybody else was going down for the count. So he was kind of like the last one. So I think they can't be like, you know, right away, like, oh, you know, he's back as like death or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Forget his sacrifice. So, you know, you have to take us to the funeral. But I'm just saying, we in the X-Men territory. Who was ever just like down for the count?
I feel like, and I agree with you, Damon. I think that it could be that this show is trying to raise the stakes, which a lot of fans like. And they do believe that that's the path that this show is taking. I just think that in the grand scheme of things with the X-Men universe and a lot of fans that know the comic book history, that this is not a George R.R. Martin type of show. We're not going to get like Game of Thrones with these characters. A lot of X-Men characters and a lot of comic book characters in general, they'll die and they'll come back. So maybe, you know, like for example, Callisto and Leech, maybe they'll be gone forever. Like those deaths may just be permanent deaths. I just feel like with Gambit, that's a death that I don't think will be permanent. But we'll see how that plays out. We will definitely see, because there's just so much more story to tell with Gambit. So moving on to the next scene, Rogue, she confronts General Thunderbolt Ross, who actually is going to appear in the live action Captain America Brave New World as Harrison Ford. So cool little Easter egg there. And she interrogates him about Henry Gyrick, who we previously seen in prison back in the X-Men 97 episode one scene. So Ross informs her that Gyrick is not there. And then back at the X-Men mansion, Cyclops receives bad news from the president. The UN will not be committing any more aid to the relief efforts in Genosha. With no one left to help them out, the team decides to head to Genosha themselves. So I'm going to stop there. What your thoughts about, you know, Rogue confronting Thunderbolt, and also about Gyrick, who we see in prison, and also the fact that Genosha is not going to get any more help from the president with relief efforts.
Man, that scene with Rogue was like one of my favorite, I think, of the episode. Like, I thought that, I mean, now granted, she's mad, and you know, at some point you like, it's gonna hit a wall where she has the face, you know, that he's gone and she has to deal with it. But I love that she was the forefront and getting to see her fight and just use all her power. Like, when you mad, you mad. Like, when you lose somebody that you love, there ain't no stopping that. So I like how they let her put everything into that. And she was like, I'm ready to get answers. I can't cry right now. I can't sit in there right now. I need some answers. And I love when she goes up to Ross, I think you said. I can't remember if he was a captain or the general that was in there.
General.
But general. So when she went up to the general, and I remember the line before where he was like, we're in the facility that holds the Hulk. How is she going to get in here? And she busts right through that sucker. Like, it wasn't even nothing. Like, you know, I thought that was just, it's just like, it was amazing. Like that whole sequence. And, you know, he was like, I thought you supposed to be the good guys. And, you know, she was like, well, not today, because y'all done messed with the wrong one. You know, like, she was at the end of the rope, like losing both of these men. So it was just amazing that they started with a punch. And I was like, I wasn't mad at it.
Like, look at her name. Her name is Rogue.
Yeah.
You know, when You got to, you are who you say you are, player. You know,
Rogue, exactly. Rogue. Yep, yep.
It's not, she was not there for games. Like, when they was like, yeah, we were safe in the Hulk, I was like, oh, this is a setup. She's about to rip through this right now. and that's what happened when you get somebody what's called a white hot lightning mad. You know, it's just, that's how it goes down like that.
Yep.
Now, the scientists that created the Sentinels, what was his name again? What was one of the scientists that was locked up? His storyline is so crazy. I didn't even expect all this to go and with and who's all playing a part. I know we're going to get to it later. I don't want to, but it's a lot going on with that.
Yeah,
with
it
that
is. Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't expect Genosha to get any aid though. I didn't expect like even from the origins of the X-Men of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, pointing out, you know, Magneto and Professor X pointing out the correlations between real world scenarios and, you know, things that's being, the way that's being fed to us through animation, through storytelling, it within this element, it sometimes always paralleled each other. And you can real take life. Genosha out. They take Genosha out, you know, use that, substitute that name for Haiti, substitute that name for a lot of other horrible countries.
Anything.
So I kind of, and so that's one of the reasons I'm such an anime fan and such I mix these these art platforms within the storytelling I do, is because you're able to do things that you may not be able to do in live action. You're able to get away with a lot more in animation and storytelling in that aspect. And I really always appreciated them from that. Even as a little kid, I just knew that with the stories that they were putting together and how they were being relayed to mask it under a different way has always been applauded by me, you know? So I knew they wouldn't win late.
I felt like that's why us as like young blurs, as young black nerds, we always gravitated towards the X-Men because, you know, we felt like mutants too. You know, we felt like these outliers. So yeah, it was always a show that we could relate to on so many deeper levels. And now X-Men 97, here we are as adults and we still relate to it on even a more visceral, deeper level. So I love every aspect of the storytelling of this series. It's incredible. So Rogue arrives at her next stop at a snowy cabin housing. And guess who we see? We see Captain America, which was amazing. And she demands more information about Gyrick. And while Captain America is there, Cap is reluctant to help. And he does offer Rogue some helpful information. And Gyrick apparently has been transferred out of prison and kept at the cabin by an organization known as OZT. And OZT stands for Operation Zero Tolerance. But he had already been moved to a new location in Mexico. So Cap refuses to help Rogue. And in Rogue fashion, which is like a bomb scene, I love it, Rogue takes his shield and throws it and just completely disrespects Cap, which I love. So I'm going to stop there because there was a lot in that scene that was just amazing. Of course, we see the appearance of Captain America. We learn about the OZT, Operation Zero Tolerance. And then this great moment with Rogue being Rogue by taking his shield, throwing it. And I'll start by saying that apparently fans online were really outraged by this, but I don't know why, because this is a great moment of her character development because she was being very defiant in this act because she's upset right now. She's upset over the death of not only Gambit, but also Magneto, which, you know, we'll find out later about his story, but she's upset about these two deaths. She's in mourning. She's upset that Captain America, who heralds himself as this hero, is not able to help her in her most vulnerable moment. So she's like, you know, the hell was wrong with you? Like, you're nobody to me. So she throws his shield as a way of disrespecting him. And I thought that was just a perfect symbol of that. So I don't know what fans were in their feelings about, but anyway, what were your thoughts about that scene?
Rogue was being an asshole. Okay, I'm sorry about profanity. Can we use profanity? I'm sorry.
No, yeah, by all means, yeah.
Rogue was being an a-hole. Now, Captain America knew that she was not in the midst. He assessed the situation. First off, it was amazing seeing Captain America pop up. I did not expect that. I was really happy to see that. I was like, oh, I thought they was either going to tussle. I'm like, I don't think he can handle that smoke with Rogue, though. She's like, but he got superhuman strength, too. But she just tore open something that was meant for the Hulk. You know, so he was trying to, he gave her some information, he helped her, but he was kind of, you can tell he was reluctant on what he was saying and he was holding back. So it was because she wanted to pop somebody's head off, and that might not have been the best thing to do at the time. I understand, I can understand it, but you know, he tried to mitigate the situation as best he could.
But she's in mourning, she's upset. She needed help. I know, but help her.
He helped her, but he didn't give it because he was like, I just can't give all this information. But he did help her. And then she's gonna do the a-hole thing and just tossed his shield. And she threw it far too. You saw it? You see how far it went?
Yeah, yeah. So you gotta walk all that way. It's not like he can fly.
It's just a little bit of cardio. Yeah, what you mean? Exactly. A little bit of cardio.
Like to run, right? Go ahead. That's it. I love the scene though. I was really happy to see Captain America pop up. It showed it was the first instance of the worlds, you know, of blending and crossing and across connections that we're going to see later on in the live action, I believe, as well. I was really excited.
By the way, really quick, on Twitter, because of course Bodemio is very active on social media. Someone asked if Spider-Man is going to be making a future appearance on X-Men 97, and Bo DiMaio said, just wait and see. He didn't say no. So we will see about that. I'm excited. Okay, go on, Ryan.
No, I just, you know, I'm not mad at Captain America had to get a little step. Somebody, you know, he'll be all right. He'll get it back, you know. But she was definitely in her feelings. She, you know, did she have to do him like that? No, but I mean, Captain America, let's just go back to like some of the lines he delivers. I was like, bro, did you think that through? Like, you really think she gonna sit here and be like, oh, let's play by the rules? Like, she's already been busted in there. You know, like, is we really gonna, you know, she not getting ready to play by the rules right now. Like, that's not the right time. It reminds me, in the Avengers movie, where he's like language, like they get ready to bust in to like find, I forgot what, like they find the twins or something, like the Maximoff twins or something. And they're like blowing up stuff, busting up stuff. And somebody like said some kind of cuss word or something. And he goes like language. I think it was like Iron Man or something. And he always has these like one-off moments where he's like, it's like, what are you talking about right now? Like, we had a hardcore fight. Nobody ain't trying to play by the rules. He like always has these one-off moments and you're just like, why is he, you know, doing what he does? But I do appreciate him showing up. And Josh, shout out to Josh Keaton for doing the voiceover. Thought it was well done. So yeah, I do appreciate him trying to show up and, you know,
for Captain America.
So I do appreciate that. But yeah, it was definitely a funny scene, but you know, we'll see. He might get it back. I mean, hopefully he don't try to like battle Rogue out because he was mad about getting them steps in. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah, he'll get his shield back. He just got to walk away. Get it. So, meantime, you know, the relief efforts are still going on, even though the president has said that he's got to stop it going forward. Roberto and Jubilee, they discuss their different points of view of living openly as mutants. And Roberto finally, because, you know, he has not revealed to his parents that he's a mutant. So he decides that he's going to tell his mom the truth and, you know, come out, so to speak, metaphorically, about being a mutant. And he tells his mom and she accepts it. She's like, you know, of course, I knew this all along. but she decides that she wants him to keep it a secret. And she wants to do this for, because she's very wealthy. And I'm not quite sure what their business is, but it involves them having alliances with very wealthy investors. So for the sake of maintaining those alliances with their investors, she wants Roberto to keep him being a mutant a secret. Meanwhile, Beast and the reporter from X-Men 97 episode 5, they share a conversation about tolerance and what it really means. And Beast is kind of turned off at the reporter's reaction to mutant rioting. So I'm going to stop there and ask what your thoughts about Roberto, you know, coming out to his mom about him being a mutant, and then Beast and the reporter's exchange.
I guess for Roberto coming out, I was thinking, okay, I see Jubilee's point. I think it's important for, him to do his thing, to tell his parents in case something does happen. Cause you know, they kind of touch and go right now, like seeing what happened in Genosha. You don't want them to have to get that call about their son if they don't really know what's going on. But at the same time, her reaction, you're like, well, that's why he was trying to go around hiding it. You know, they obviously knew something was going on with their son. But at the same time, it's kind of, I don't know. I feel like you have to be careful when you're like, well, I need you to, we're going to have to talk about how you approach this, right? Like it might look bad on the business. Like you might have to tone it down here and there because we don't know. You know, it's kind of that, what kind of pulls you back. And then going into the same scene with Miss Tilby and Hank, it's that same thing of like the whole time they're asking for, you know, they're trying to be tolerated, right? By the rest of the world. Like the mutants are like, okay, I can do this. You know, maybe they'll leave me alone if they understand. If I try to save enough people, you know, save enough humans, they'll leave us alone. But then you always have like, they won't understand. It's like the mutants have to change things about themselves for everybody else to understand, you know, which is a story that so many groups, right? People of color, so many groups, different religious backgrounds have to deal with all the time. So it's like, you're dealing with, it's like that. It's going to always be that question of, you know, are you doing Martin Luther King? Are you doing Malcolm X? You know, because everybody has to figure out how to exist. So which one, you know, which side are you going to be on? And then also when you get hurt bad enough, you know, what, at what point do you stop? You know, like, have they hurt you? You know, like they lost friends and family. So, you know, when it's like, when you hit that level, it's just like, are you, you can't just pull somebody back with words sometimes when they get that hurt, when it's that devastating. So I like how they show the different sides of this. Like one is just like, well, I got to fight for my people. The other one's like, well, I got my family over here. Do I tell them who I am or do I just leave it alone? So I like how they have you like asking so many questions like within these two scenes.
Yeah. I enjoyed the duality of the storylines and the duality of in its own time. So yeah, you have the parallels of this young man who's deciding to come out to his parents, who's already had an idea who he is, who he was in any time, but it took his own time to come and talk to his mother, who was already in the know, who's already informed of the whole situation, but also has a way of, you know, execution. Now that's a different thing as a person to come in and looking for acceptance. And then here's our plan, way of execution of whatever this acceptance looked like. And then it's the same thing with Hank. Speaking to the reporter, he spoke to her as much as he could to like, hey, we've done this to this, if you look accepted. Now we're not asking for acceptance anymore. It's now it looks like it may be time to demand acceptance because you got, you know, because how humans, you know, have been, you know, taking for granted that these people have been checking their powers, checking themselves constantly to fit in to someone that they can obviously see fear them. And again, it's a parable to what, you know, a lot of people, a lot of groups, a lot of socially disadvantaged groups, economically disadvantaged groups have been saying for a long time. And it's been given a voice to the voiceless by saying, hey, after a certain time, we're going to stop asking and start demanding and start fighting for equality as opposed to trying to, you know, throw rocks at a system that is constantly going. So I really love the duality of that scene of speaking about things in its own time. Cause Hank in his own time said, hey, F it. I'm logging out of being so, you know, analytical and, you know, intellectually mature to help this whole situation. It may be time to go turn into the beast and understanding, because you got to respect the beast now. And then this guy's coming and now he's speaking with his mother on in. So that parallel scene was, I think, was executed quite well.
If only they made Beast as multidimensional in the live action as they have in the animated series. I was just like, Why can't you guys get these characters right in live action?
I love Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah.
I love
Kelsey Grammer. He's really great. He's so great. Yeah. That's why, spoiler alert for those that haven't seen the Marvels, but you know, that end credit scene was fantastic. And I'm excited to see where they go with his character. It guys gotta get those scripts right in the live action area. So moving on to the next scene in Mexico, Rogue tracks down Gyrick and she touches him. Because she's interrogating him at this point and she's not getting the information she needs. So she touches him, experiencing a vision of future enemies the team will have to face. Later on, the team.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Later on, the team discovers Emma Frost has survived the attack. So Emma Frost is alive. So Emma Frost fans out there are cheering and very excited to discover that their favorite is here to stay on X-Men 97. She survived the attack and manifesting her diamond skin power for the first time. The team also receives a call from Bolivar Trask, who reveals that Mr. Sinister's connection to the Genosha attack and offers to reveal everything to the team in Madripoor. So now we're getting more information about Trask's connection to Sinister.
So I'm sorry. I've been trying to turn it off.
That's okay.
I'm trying to turn it off this whole time.
That's okay. So we're going to stop there. And because that's a lot to unpack. Like we obviously Rogue and gets information from Gyrick and she sees a vision about all of the future enemies. We discover that Emma Frost is alive. And then we get some information from Bolivar Trask about his connection to Sinister. So what are your thoughts?
Sinister's, I mean, just by definition of name, just Jesus Christ, the stuff that he's done has, what he did to Scott alone. Now he just Scott alone. This man head ain't been right since. You know, when I say the long game, I got more respect for him now. I'm talking about, he plays things out his chess pieces are so far ahead. You need a man like Professor X around to go up against this guy intellectually because he's so far ahead of the game. But when it comes to that interrogation, she got to do what she got to do. You know, the conventional methods haven't been working. They've been playing off. You know, you guys are not basically. They've been treating the X-Men like the police, like, oh, you got a code of ethics that you got to follow and rules and things like that. Oh, no. Rogue's like, hey, man, we ain't got time for all that. Let me just get straight to it. So I enjoyed all of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I like when she rolled up and she was like, this ain't a prison. He had a damn resort. Like, what we doing right now?
Right,
like,
yeah.
She rolled up like, what are we doing right now? So yeah, he definitely, he was like very smug and working on whatever he working on. I'm like, sir, do you understand the piece that you don't put in place? Right. So I'm just like, yeah, she had every right to jack him up. But yeah, it's getting crazy to kind of figure out like the pieces that are coming into place and who thinks they're covered by higher organization and powers and blah, blah, blah. And like, she's kind of slowly figuring out what's going on. And you know, shout out to Emma Frost being okay, that diamond, I guess transmutation they talked about. I was like, all right, girl, do your thing. I was like, okay.
Icy, babe. She missed Icy. Yeah,
right. Right. Yeah, that was pretty dope. Like I like when she was like, you know, I do well under pressure. You know, I've always been known to do well under pressure. So I like that.
The one liner was crazy, wasn't it?
So in Mexico, Rogue is found by Nightcrawler, who offers her comfort, which that was such a touching scene, just seeing Nightcrawler comforting Rogue. But he offers her comfort over the deaths of Magneto and Gambit, and the rest of the team joins them. And yeah, seeing the team all together, like in that shot was, I was just like, it was gut wrenching. The rest of the team joins them and they make their way to Madripoor to uncover the truth. Gyrick, who is recovering from the confrontation with Rogue, is killed by an unknown assailant. So in Madripoor, the team discovers a hidden lab in the UN Legion filled with advanced cybernetic models. And then Beast points out that this type of technology should not even be possible. The team finds Trask standing on the ledge of the building, and he reveals that the OZT was born out of an old Sentinel program and that Sinister is developing a new kind of Sentinel. Trask, he tries to jump, but is caught by Rogue, who ultimately lets him drop. I'm going to stop there because one of the best lines in this episode is said by Morph, where he calls Trask a poor man's Oppenheimer. And I just love that line, given the fact that Oppenheimer was like one of the biggest movies this year, won Best Picture. I don't know what the timing was on writing that line and like the Oppenheimer phenomenon that happened, but I love that line and I love that scene. So yeah, what did you guys think about that whole exchange with obviously the more somber moment with the team comforting Rogue and then all of this that unfolded between Trask and, you know, Rogue having him on the ledge, and then we learn all about this technology that is happening right now.
Yeah, I'm glad that almost while that Rogue was about to hit was her team at first, because I was nervous it was going to be somebody else, because she was just, you know, she's going full speed ahead, taking people out left and right. So I'm glad she had that moment where she can kind of cry it out a little bit. Now we see it wasn't fully like the healing moment. Like she's still on the rampage. She's still on it. But I like how they were like, we got her for this moment. Like we found her. So we got her for this moment. But yeah, Trask, my dude, like you got on the wrong team too late. My brother, like you should have did this quicker. You should have changed over quicker. Like he got on the wrong team too late. Like he was trying to, you know, take himself out. And, you know, like I for a split second thought Rogue was going to do something different. I for like a split second, but I forgot, you know, it came back into like, you know, she's in the revenge mode. But, you know, I mean, my boy Trask, I mean, he got some things I guess he got an answer for. And, you know, he bounced back pretty quick, I might say. So, you know, I think I'm gonna let her have that one. But yeah, it's just, and then I don't know, it's just a lot going on. You know, like Damien said, Sinister is just, woo. I mean, he done did a number on some of these people right now till we figure out, like, obviously there's some bigger guys coming down the line, but he's definitely done done his job as far as like laying the little steps, and everybody got these mind games going on that they can't get out of. You know, they keep thinking, oh, you know, I don't know why they keep thinking this, but they keep thinking he got them, like, you know, Trask and all them, like, oh, well, he told me I'm only doing blah, blah, blah. I'm only doing steps 1, 2, and then I'm good. And, you know, now he's trying to jump off a building. So it's just, it's crazy. Like the game that he's playing, you know, with everybody is just wild.
Mm-hmm. You know, how I felt about what Rogue did was everybody won't make it. That's the reality.
Yes, there you go. Yeah,
everybody won't make it, and a lot of her friends didn't make it. A lot of the, you know, a lot of mutants didn't make it. So, yep. You know, you're kind of responsible for what you put out there, and I can understand why she did it. Would I have done the same thing? I don't know, but I definitely can see how she was feeling about what this man was responsible for. So, you know, again, taking it back to the real world, we didn't let a lot of those people that did these heinous atrocities live in our, you know, from our standpoints, you know, we just had to go. So, you know, it's like that sometimes. I did feel the way you felt, Jamie, when all the X-Men showed up. It's like the hair on your back, your neck, your people's, yeah, there, they showed up no matter what she's doing, and we got your back, girl. So I really enjoy. I really, really enjoy that. But you, when she dropped her, like, yeah, that tracks. You know, that definitely tracks.
There's an interesting parallel too. Even though technically she didn't throw him off the building, she let him drop. But there's a cool parallel when you think about the fact that she threw Captain America's shield, and then she kind of let him be thrown off of the building with Trask. So I just, you know, it just dawned on me as we're talking about this, that parallel that happens in this episode in Rogue's defiance. That was a very interesting moment for Rogue. But when he falls off that building, we think he's dead, but Trask isn't dead. He comes back as a human sentinel, and he decides he's going to attack the team. but Trask proves to be a bit too much for the team, and they're almost taken out before Cable arrives to help. And here we see Cable, and Cyclops finally realizes the truth that Cable is actually his son, and which is Nathan Summers. And Cable's like, oh, we ain't got time for family reunions, Dad. Like, I got a society to save right now. And Cable reveals that Sinister is actually working for someone much worse. And X-Men 97 finally reveals its ultimate villain, which we are going to talk about. I'm going to stop here because last week's episode, we did cover this. We talked about Bastion, and we had some like little Easter eggs about Bastion and how we thought that that might be a possibility. So I like the fact that we kind of called it here on the Black Girl Nerds podcast. And then he shows up. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Bastion later, but I'll stop here with this scene. What are your thoughts with Trask turning into a human sentinel, Cable showing up, having a little family reunion with Cyclops? Also, I forgot to mention, Jean was there too. And, you know, Jean, there was like kind of an awkward moment between Jean and Cable. But yeah, what did you think about that weird family reunion and the scene overall, and then what we ultimately find out who the real villain is of this show?
Well, after you, Ryan.
I know, right? Man, that's a lot to take in. Well, the family reunion, I'm just always gonna feel for my girl Jean, because Lord have mercy. Like, that is the most awkward. Like, it's gonna continue to be like just so awkward. He was like, get out of my head, you're not her. You know, like it, I don't know. It's just it's just when you have to be the stepmom and it's just a hell situation. Like, I just don't even know. Like, it's just so weird. It is so weird. And you know, Cyclops, he always looking like, you know, he's like five steps behind both of them, you know, like both Madeline, both, you know, so I don't know what this dude doing, but I don't know. I'm, you know, I'm praying for him. Hopefully the family, you know, works out some kind of little dynamic where they can,
you
know,
praying for him.
I'm praying for him. Like, I don't even know.
If Scott plays his cards right, I mean, the twin sisters might be, right?
I mean, Scott, I mean, Jean and Madeline really are the same. They are the same person. They share the same DNA.
Exactly. They got the same markers. Yeah. One just carbon dated a little later. They don't know who ends and what begins. So, you know, who knows? Yeah. You know, hey, I just say make the best out of a bad situation, in my opinion.
There you go,
brother. If you can. You know, if just have to, if you got the mental maturity and emotional maturity, you might come out ahead of here situation, Scott. You know, if you can work this out, man, because they both love him. Clearly, they have a mind.
That's true. Yeah,
they both have a mind conversation. You see the drama playing out in front of us, right? We all have this whole thing, so. I mean, they got a kid, technically. Who, you know? So, hey, man, I want the best for the children. So, you know, a stable home is always best.
Even if you time traveling, make it stable, people. Come on now,
make it stable.
Yeah, make it stable, man. Make it stable. Man. Cable deserves that.
Yeah. I have a feeling Cable, we're obviously going to explore that he's got some mommy issues already. Because, you know, he's like, Jean, you're not. What was the line that he said, Ryan? Jean, get out of my head.
Yeah, he was like, get out of my head. You're not her. Yeah. I was like, I was like, Jesus. Okay, so
he's got mommy issues already. It's like, bruh. Okay. So, Bastion. meets with Mr. Sinister. And Bastion, by the way, is voiced by actor Theo James, who we know from Divergent fame. Also on The White Lotus. Nice. New show, Gentleman, the Guy Ritchie show. So, you know, we know who Theo James is. So he's the voice behind Bastion. And Bastion is the true architect behind everything. He is a mutant killer. Mr. Sinister is just in cahoots with him. We thought Mr. Sinister was the architect, but no, it's Bastion. And while Sinister disagrees with how Bastion is kind of doing things, Bastion promises that his plan will be the one to finally vanquish the X-Men once and for all. Bastion also reveals that he has learned that Charles Xavier is alive. So, the stakes have been raised. Bastion enters an abandoned barbershop, and we discover that Magneto is alive. So we kind of called this last week a little bit as well, because remember when I mentioned that in Charles Xavier's visions that he saw Gambit, but he didn't see Magneto, which to me implies that maybe, you know, Magneto could be alive. So yeah, there we go. So he's being held captive with a power suppressing collar, and it's not clear what Bastion has in store for X-Men's new leader, but we're gonna see. So that's the end of the episode. A lot going on. I will say this before I get your thoughts. Bodemayo tweeted about episode 8, which is called Tolerance is Extinction. He says to watch One Man's Worth. So if you go back and watch One Man's Worth of the X-Men animated series, he says to reference that in preparation to next week's episode, Tolerance is Extinction. So he's given us some homework to do. So I thought that was kind of cool. I love these Easter eggs that he gives us on Twitter. but yeah, what do you guys think about that last scene? That's a lot. I mean, Bastion is... I got to read up on him because I don't know a lot about his backstory. I'll be honest. So I need to know all things Bastion.
That's what I was about to ask you. I didn't know too much about his backstory either. So I would love to know, you know, what his origin story is, because why is he so hell-bent on taking down the mutants and like that myself? You know, let me know.
And I think from what I have, you know, researched and looked as well, Bastion's story goes even further back to the animated series. Like, he, I think, is like the architect behind everything that's been happening with the threat of the mutants being under this extinction program since the first series. We just didn't really see him have much of a presence. So I think that's why Bo's like, go back to this episode, because you might see some hints. So it's very interesting how all of this is sort of coming into play and unfolding. But yeah, Ryan, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, the only thing I could find on him was that, you know, just being part of the OVT, like kind of starting that up and kind of leading that. And then I think they said something about him being like, you can kind of tell by, like, I guess the way they kind of slowly revealed his face and like his build. But him being like part of that giant robotic master mold and like, you know, advanced sentinel is kind of like a combination of what he is. So basically, you know, get the hell out of his way. But, you know, him overpowering or having something else to say than Sinister is scary. Like, if somebody's coming to Sinister and like, oh, you just playing, like, I, you know, get out of the way. Like, I got something else to top it is super scary. So yeah, he didn't come to play. And then I got excited when I was like, oh, shoot, Magneto's back. But then they got him in a collar. They got your boy in a collar. He getting shaved and has no control. And I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, this is not, it's just not good. And then he knows about Charles coming back, too. Like, he's just getting all the information and all the stuff that just puts him ahead of the X-Men, who essentially right now are, you could say they're at the breaking point, right? Like, there's so many members that are going through things. So many, what happened in Genosha, they lost a lot of friends. So they're not really focused right now. And somebody like this is getting ready to just like rampage, which is not going to be good.
Yeah. I do appreciate Charles denouncing him. Well, he's not denouncing the X-Men. And then he was like, I denounced the humanity. I denounced the world. I denounced. But when it got to the X-Men, he just couldn't say the words. He just couldn't let it happen. And yeah. then he, you know, and then everything hit. So I appreciate it. He was like, baby, if you want to live in my world, you want to rock with me, you got to roll with me. He's like, I got to go. And yeah. denounced that whole thing, get back and getting back to his peoples and humanity to help save that whole thing. Because that was the classroom scenario that he had put together and letting them know his type of power. Because I don't think they really respected Charles's power for some reason. He had to, right. you know, putting them in the desk to let them know, hey, stop playing with me because I can really do this when I want to. You know, yeah. if I really want to, I can do this to you. I let mm-hmm. you keep on doing all this other stuff and talking big with your chest out and all this thing. But if need be, you know, that is my woman. Now, understand what's going to go on if we got to get to it.
I mean, they were disrespecting him, saying that he lived in a Milky Way yeah. ghetto. Like, come on, girl.
It was going hard, wasn't she?
She was
being real extra.
She was like, you need to stay here and protect us. You're not going nowhere.
Yeah. Exactly. Somebody needs to check her for real. So yeah, I cannot wait for Tolerance's Extinction, which comes out next week. That is the end of our recap of Bright Eyes. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. Before we go, Damien, do you have anything that you want to shout out? Any projects that you're working on, and also where our listeners can find you on social?
Oh, sure. You can check me out. It's real easy. On all my social media is Damien D. Smith, D-A-M-I-E-N D. Smith. It's just my name. And I got a couple projects coming up. I got, it's out. Well, Driftwood, it's a movie I'm on. You can catch on Apple right now. You can get it off Apple. That's out right now. And then a movie that I'm in called Nine. It's going to be in Cannes this year. So we're going to, I'm heading over to Paris for the first time. I'm going to Cannes for the movie Nine. It's an international thriller that we shot in Ghana and in America. So that's rolling out. So look out for that. It's Nine, the movie on social media, I believe. And then there's, I'm just finished up some TV projects. So you'll see those pretty soon as well. Had a great time shooting with my folks. You got to keep that under wraps a little bit. You'll see that when it's coming out or when I'm able to talk about it, because you do get non-disclosures that you got to sign out. Right. You don't want to play with Apple. You don't want to play with Apple. There's an Easter egg. Apple don't play around about their non-disclosures.
Oh yeah. I think they might be talking to Marvel a little bit. You know, they got to keep it tight.
Exactly. So we having a good time with that, you know, going those projects. Cause and also I got two projects. That's all on the acting side. On the directing side, I have two projects that will be in Black Girls Rock this year. And we will be announcing those pretty soon. And I believe we'll be having something going on with Essence this year as well, down in New Orleans. So Black Girl Rocks in Atlanta, Essence happened in New Orleans. And I believe we're having a documentary, Target St. Louis Volume 1, is having a special screening with the History Museum of St. Louis, Missouri. And we'll be having that in July. So those are the projects and things that's coming up pretty soon. I'm, you know, been pretty busy and,
I mean, do you sleep? It doesn't sound like you get much sleep.
We got a couple other surprises coming out, but I enjoy life. I enjoy what I'm doing. So it's no real work. You know, it's all passion and love, you know?
And can I say this Nine? I was just looking up while you're talking. This cover is badass. Like, this is pretty cool.
Thank you.
I like it.
I was just gonna say congratulations on getting out to Cannes, by the way, because you don't see a lot of like Black projects going out there. So that's a big
shout out to our director Chris Otto, Rosemary Zimu, myself, Chastity Sanders, Angela as our producer. We, you know, making it happen, man. Appreciation to Silver Lining Entertainment and you know, A Factor Entertainment. These people, you know, they put together the first, from my knowledge, of, you know, American Ghanaian production to, you know, that's going to be, that's, you know, that's going to help. My whole goal and to bridge the gaps between the continent and the continent of Africa and the USA. So, you know, this is a step forward in doing that.
And you got to connect with my friend Law Watford. He's got his film Shadow Acting that's also at Cannes.
So, yes. Shout out to Law. Shout out to Law. Shadow Acting was, I was in Brooklyn. I was so happy I was in Brooklyn, got to catch a screening of Shadow Acting. So it's, yeah, check it out. Shout out to Genia Morgan. She's in it too. It's going to be nice, man. Hometown, STL, St. Louis, all day, every day. You know how we do it. STL.
Awesome, awesome. Well, cool, cool. Was there anything else? Your socials, where can folks follow you?
Again, my social, Damian D. Smith on all social media. IG, Facebook, and everything. D-A-M-I-E-N D. Smith.
Cool. I want to make sure we got that. Well, thank you, Damian, so much for coming on our show.
Thank you.
Brian, as always. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you. Congratulations on everything. Amazing.
Yeah. For real, seriously. I mean, just don't forget about us, little people.
Oh, what?
I know, right? Don't forget about us. Yeah.
You're getting your Oscar.
Yeah, don't forget about me, man. I want to pop on a recap another time. You know, I'm a blur.
You're always welcome. You're always welcome. And again, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.